broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios inside the Decoy in Spring Branch.
Don't sweat the technique.
It's the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Brian McDonald. Wait, where's Jeremy?
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank. I am Branham. I am not at the Decoy. I'm in Dallas, but the boys are there. Blank
hey,
and Brian.
That?
Brian's there on site engineering. I don't know, but you bid for the ball fake.
You bid for the ball fake.
Because he got you to bite. It distracted you. It threw you off guard.
I didn't like it.
You bid for the pump fake or the shot fake, whatever synonym you want to use, you fell for it.
Thanks, Jeremy. Good to hear from you.
I mean, you admitted it. You said you could hear the hesitation, and then you said you didn't like it.
Didn't.
What didn't you like about it?
Because even Brian, we all paused like, what the hell is this? We're all here one way or another.
Keeping us on our toes. I thought it was good stuff there. I don't know who writes that stuff anymore, by the way.
You thought it was good that it didn't have your name in it?
Well, I mean, I think it was funny. Yeah, I think it was a chuckle. I mean, hey, he's Blank, Brian, and where's Branham? Yeah, I thought it was pretty funny. I thought it was some good stuff. I thought it was better stuff that Spencer said.
Ooh. So the war with Spencer hasn't ended.
Oh, no, it'll never end. I forgot what I was going to say. Who writes that stuff now? Who writes that? I don't even know.
Oh, that would be Michael Carroll. No, Joe doesn't write that.
Okay. Well, that's why I was surprised that it was funny. Like, that's why I was surprised that I thought it was comedic and, like, got a chuckle out of it.
Michael Carroll's very funny.
Yeah, well, that's why I was wondering. Because I was like, is it Joe? Joe doesn't make me laugh.
No.
Michael?
No.
Oh, okay. That makes some sense. Now, I thought that was well played. Like, I'm the one that the insult was hurled at, and I thought it was funny. Like, it's... What a way to start the show. They're broadcasting live from the Decoy in Spring Branch. Astros opening day gets started here in a couple of minutes. 6:05. College hoops at 6 o'clock today, too. Sweet 16 begins tonight. 4 matchups. Watch all of that from the Decoy starting now all the way into the evening. And they got some drink specials for you. $100 ounce Shinerbach Towers for just $10. Can't beat that. $3 Makers, $2 Mexican Candy. They got the March Madness, $6 Casamigos. Oh, that sounds really fun. Also, if you're looking for a place to watch the Cougs tomorrow, well, it's your West Houston Watch Party. They'll have the full audio of the game tomorrow between Houston and Duke, and they'll have the DJ playing in between the game during commercials. So the Decoy is your home all weekend long. Get it started now. The boys are out there now. Blankers, I'm falling in love with this Rockets team. I'm getting closer and closer to saying the L word with the Houston Rockets. I love that. Everything what Ime Udoka's done, we're starting to see these young players develop. We're starting to see these young players, I still don't even think they're close to their ceiling, but we're starting to see the arrow trending up with all of these young players. I'm not sure you can point to one healthy player on this team where the arrow's not pointing up, young player not pointing up. I know that SGA didn't play yesterday for Oklahoma City. But this team, not that long ago, had 5 road wins. They're up to 11. They've won 10 in a row. They go to Oklahoma City. They win a tough overtime game against a 50-win team. I'm enjoying the heck out of this.
No, you should. I mean, this is entertaining basketball. This is all we could have asked for and more when we were all quite honestly disappointed and found the Rockets hard to watch a year ago. This is amazing stuff because this is a team growing up right before our eyes. We're seeing these young players not only develop, but like show what they can really do. And obviously the easy one to look at is a Jalen Green because the turnaround has been drastic. It has been impressive, and he continues to do the things that we wanted to see when he was drafted. But when you look at Amen Thompson in his rookie year, you look at the shots that Jabari's hitting and the double-doubles he's putting up and what he's contributing – everybody seems to be putting their mark on this streak, on this team. And you know, I thought about it more and more because you and I have had this ongoing, you know, dialogue about how valuable it would be for this team to make the playoffs and gain this experience. But even a game last night where you saw for all of the greatness of what Amen Thompson did, he screwed up. He didn't foul when he was supposed to. He missed a couple of putbacks. And Udoka was just like, it's a learning. You could just see he wasn't going to bark at him. He wasn't going to rip his head off because he knew this was a learning, teachable moment where he's going to get better. And the next time, he's going to remember to do it right. And it's going to be amazing for the development of this team.
Yeah, the contribution from everybody has been fun to watch. Amen Thompson's so interesting to me, and we'll get to Jalen Green here shortly. But Amen, he, you know, drafted like he's a point guard, and I still think that he's going to be a point guard someday. But it's fascinating to me. He might be a power forward. Like, he can play 1 through 5, especially on the defensive end. He can guard 1 through 5. It's awesome to see. He has a game yesterday where he went for 25 points, 15 rebounds. Like, you kidding me? This guy's a rookie putting up 25, 15, and 4. He's doing it kind of out of position. I don't know if he really has a position. He's just a basketball player that can play anywhere on the floor. He's awesome. Like, he's so unique relative to the rest of the NBA.
Like, this is where it's the best, most positive thing I can say, and some people would say in other cases it might be a negative. I don't know what position he plays, and quite honestly, I don't care because he does so many things so well. He handles the basketball. His rebounding ability and his ability to defend multiple positions is at a very, very high level already in this league. And then when you see his ability to affect the game in a positive way. Maybe he's not the greatest outside shooter yet, but he still finds a way to score, and he finds a way to rebound, and he finds a way to find the open man. And with his defensive abilities and what he can do in many different ways to fill up a box score, it's just fun to watch this kid play. And then when you think about his age, and this is his rookie year, you're going, yeah, this is going to be a kid you're going to like to watch for a long time.
Yeah, he's fun to watch. I think he's already really good, and he's just going to continue to get better. If he can knock down a consistent three-point shot, and I'm not even saying that he needs to be a 40% three-point shooter. If he can be someone who shoots 30% but can knock down the open shot, that's only going to help his game. Jabari, like my thing with Jabari, rebound the basketball, man. Like, rebound the basketball. Whenever you have three rebounds in a game, I don't like seeing that. But he hit that big three in the end of the fourth quarter. He looks more confident with that shot. And he looked, he was only 2 for 5 in that game yesterday from the three-point line. But what I like about Jabari, especially in yesterday's game, no hesitation. Because, like, in his rookie year, it's like, oh, should I be taking the shot? Should I not be taking the shot? One thing that really stood out to me yesterday, even on the misses, catch and shoot, zero hesitation, and I think that you have to have that mentality to be a good shooter.
Well, you look at it, Jeremy, look at it through the history of basketball. Recent history would tell you Ben Simmons is going to triple clutch and think hard, long and hard about any time he's left with an open three. Westbrook got to the point where he was second-guessing himself. You look at Josh Giddey, who, again, is a lot in a lot of ways on the court. He's gone through what Amen Thompson's already, you know, experienced, which is teams lay off of you. He's had a hot streak recently from 3-point line, but last night he second guessed every chance he had a wide open three and didn't want to shoot it. You don't see that with Amen Thompson. Amen knows what he's going to have to do and what the defenses are going to do until he does. He doesn't hesitate. The form looks better than average. It doesn't look all discombobulated.
We're talking about Jabari.
I was talking about Amen's ability to hit the three, but yeah, from a Jabari perspective, look, I think everybody, we say the ceiling is Chris Bosh, but a double-double from a guy that can face up and knock down threes and knock down, you know, consistent jump shots, he's got that in his bag. I just think he's still learning as he goes and understanding the NBA game, but when he understands mismatches to the point where he can put it on the floor, he can put his butt to the basket. But regardless of how high his ceiling is, what he's doing for this team and can do on a consistent basis, every team in the league would take in a heartbeat.
Dylan Brooks had 8 points in overtime yesterday. He knocked down those first two threes on back-to-back possessions and then had that little basket interference. I'm not sure it would have went in. It looked like it was rolling off of the front iron, but it was a Giddey. I think it was Giddey that touched off the front iron. And it's like, okay, cool, we'll take it. 8 points for Dylan Brooks. One of the things that I don't think that people talk about enough when it comes to Dylan Brooks, and I know we've had our arguments with Brooks, like he can be a little bit of a goon at times. He's definitely your best perimeter defender. That might be a reach. He's the guy you brought in to be that defensive-minded wing that you have him guarding the other team's best player. Also to kind of be a veteran, to be a leader, and he's pretty respected in the locker room. One thing that we're sleeping on with Dylan Brooks is how good he's been shooting the three ball this year. 36% from behind the three-point line from Dylan Brooks. This is exactly what you wanted him to be. If he shot 30, 31, 32, that's not great, especially for what you're paying him. But this is what you brought him in for, to knock down some open threes, to play really good defense, to be your tough guy. And they got into a little minor scrum again yesterday. But I think the most underrated thing this season when we look at the Rockets is the fact that Dylan Brooks is shooting over 35% from three, and that's where you got to have him. That's where you got to have him.
No, and similar to what we were talking about with three-point shooters, you have to at least have the confidence to shoot them. He has the confidence to shoot them. The guys were talking about when he played for Team Canada and had I think, 29 points in the game where they beat the U.S., but he was free-stroking from whenever he got an open shot. In this offense, if you're open, you got to shoot the ball. And when he shoots the ball, it's been going in at a pretty good clip this year. And you know, we talked – you're right. We've talked about it before. The big thing with me with Dylan Brooks is he's convinced me that when he came into this league and he's trying to make a name for himself, and, you know, that's when he did a lot of these antics, and it got him paid. Now that he's paid, I don't think he needs the gimmicky stuff as much and the get under the guy's skin as much as just go out and play your game, because he's got basketball skill. Mm-hmm. You mentioned he's an above-average defender. He's strong. He can play smart. If he makes the three ball too, I mean, he fits in with exactly what they're trying to do, and he's going to get opportunities to put the ball in the basket.
Like, he's still certainly going to be an enforcer, and I wonder how much Ime Udoka has played into that. Like, because there were some times earlier this year where Dylan Brooks was kind of making these careless fouls. I can't remember the game. It was early in the year where, like, he fouled a three-point shooter in a critical time, and Ime Udoka was very, very honest in his press conference. Like, yeah, that was a stupid foul. Like, I want, because we look at the young players with the development and Ime's contributions to the development. We look at Jalen and Alpi and Amin and Jabari. I wonder how much of what Dylan Brooks, and like, if we think that he has matured and he's not doing the stupid stuff that he did in the past, which, I mean, he still shows it every now and then, and I didn't watch him that closely in Memphis. I wonder if we can credit Ime Udoka there a bit.
I think so. And I think, Jeremy, part of it was they were all learning exactly what was expected of them from a new coach. And I think that as much as they had training camp and other things, you're not going to get into some of those type things until the actual real games start happening, when you can understand, hey, this is what's expected of me of this head coach. This is what he wants me to do in these situations. Last night, he was totally in the right. I just feel like the fact that, you know, when a player is on the ground, he wants his teammates to help him up. It's one thing if you offer your hand, he doesn't take it. But for Giddy to grab on to Jabari's wrist with both hands and, like, put a vice grip on him, I was totally fine with Dylan Brooks pushing him away, going, hey, man, just get the hell away from him. He doesn't want you doing that. And those are the kind of times when I think that's why Udoka would love to see him doing something like that. He doesn't want to see the before the whistle blows, punch in the grapes, or, you know, some of the extra stuff. But this team, we knew it. We talked about it last year. They didn't have an enforcer. They didn't have toughness. They didn't have a guy that wasn't going to back down. And they have that in Dylan Brooks, and it can be a tool.
I think they're all kind of
I think they've all adopted a little bit of it.
It's crazy. Yeah, Giddy acted like Jabari Smith was 16 years old, the way that he was grabbing at him. 713-780-ESPN, the HRNP listener line, 713-780-3776. Eric the Driver says, amazing how the Astros always seem to start at 3:05 back when y'all are in the noon slot. Now they're starting at 6:05 when y'all in the 3 slot. Isn't life crazy like that? Isn't it? Isn't it such a coincidence? Was it Alanis Morissette? Isn't life ironic?
Yes. Isn't it ironic? Yep.
There you go.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, good things happen to good people, and we just love the fact that the Astros are willing to help us out.
Yeah, they are underway, by the way. 7-1, and you can watch it at the Decoy in Spring Branch.
Oh, can you?
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Corby Craig from BetUS will be joining us down at 3:30 to talk about what to play in these Sweet 16 games coming up today and tomorrow. Killer Bee Fight Club bracket will continue. It is a Thursday, so a Bad Take Boulevard. Who makes the list this week? And we do have a Will of Bits coming up later today. Might be the first one of the week, I think. 713-780-3776. At what point do the Jalen Green haters have to apologize? We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. On YouTube, just search us at ESPN Houston. Joel's at Pac-Man Joel. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We are the Killer Bees on ESPN97.5 and ESPN92.5. It's time, basketball bettors. It's March Mania. Branham here to tell you all about BetUS.com. I endorse one sportsbook and casino, and it's BetUS.com. BetUS.com has been driving to the basket for over 30 years. This year, BetUS has an epic three-pointer, a 125% sign-up bonus on your first three deposits. Not one, not two, but three. The industry's craziest 125% sign-up bonus on your first three deposits, plus 10% gambler's insurance, and even more. BetUS accepts crypto and is offering a 200% crypto sign-up bonus. So gambler's insurance and crypto. You don't see that everywhere. March Mania Basketball can get even more exciting with their live in-game betting. It's also a blast to check out their casino after the game, whether you like blackjack, craps, roulette, whatever, where you could get a 250% casino bonus. Get started by visiting BetUS.com or give them a call at 1-800-MY-BETUS to learn all about their bonuses and special offers. BetUS is where the game begins.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios.
That one threw me off the guard, too. That was a weird one. Broadcasting from the Decoy, the boys are out there. Was that clapping that I heard?
Yeah, I was trying to get B-Mac's attention. He's a little bit involved in this game right now.
Oh, what's
Why
the
were
count?
You trying to get my attention?
Because you turned my levels down, and I wasn't sure.
Your mic was on. I turned it on during the break.
I didn't know. I mean, I'm a little distance away from you. I got to make sure I'm on the air.
Are you being a diva, Blake?
No, not this time.
I like that answer. That was well done. What's the count in y'all's game? I'm wondering how close our monitors are synced here.
Judge is coming up. I'm sorry. It's 3-2 for DeSoto right now.
He just had a foul ball.
He just fouled it off right off the plate.
Oh, that sounds like I'm a little bit ahead of you then. Okay, yep. I won't spoil things. But it looks like Fromber's already getting a little bit unhappy with the strike zone.
Well, the pitch counts up.
I will say the cameras caught this right as Gleyber Torres walked off after striking out against Fromber. He walked right over to Soto. It seemed to maybe give Soto a little bit of a tip. So hopefully the Yankees haven't picked up on something.
Oh, wow. Maybe it's the effect that his hair looks a little bit different than it did a year ago. Different look for Fromber. I was listening to the commercials, as we all should listen to the commercials all the time. I didn't realize that's how you said Dell's last name. I had no clue. Dell Olalea? I thought it was Olole. There you go.
Today no, Olalea.
Yep. Yeah, I heard Michael Carroll always says that he knows how to say it better than – because he talks to Dell, so he made very sure.
Well, he also has to make the opens.
Yeah, so he was very sure when he made the opens to the show, he said it the right way. Yeah,
yeah. I thought it was Olole. My bad, Dell. It's Ololea. There you go. The more you know. Today I learned. 713-780-ESPN. HRNP listener line, 713-780. Why are they clapping?
Double play.
Little double play
ball. Oh, y'all are ahead of me then.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. I thought you were ahead of us. I thought you already saw it. But no, yeah, ending double play.
That was a
little
5-4-3
to Joe George. That equals 64.
Bregman getting into the hole like that? That was well done. Pause. All right. When do the Jalen Green haters have to apologize? 713-780-3776. When do the Jalen Green haters have to apologize, Blankers?
Man, I mean, I think by the end of the season, if it's not already too late and they need to start doing it now. Player of the week becomes player of the month, but becomes the guy that you saw last night do the kind of things that a guy that's one of the stars of your team is supposed to do, and the way he was able to do it. I mean, this is when you start realizing, hey, it's okay to put tail between legs, foot in mouth, and say you were wrong, because that's what you want. You want this kid could grow into and become the player that you drafted him to be, and that's what you're seeing right before your eyes. I mean, a guy that has matured in so many ways. I constantly was adamant about he had basketball skill. It's just, can he translate that and mature into what it takes to be that skilled in the NBA? He's doing it now. He doesn't get down when he misses shots. He's sharing the basketball. He's the reason why Jabari got the open three in the corner. He facilitated baskets as well as just getting buckets himself, inside, outside. This is when, as a Rockets fan, it's okay to admit you were wrong, and it's okay to understand that this is who you wanted him to be.
Yeah, I think that I don't like celebrating before things are fully accomplished, but we are seeing the maturation of Jalen Green before our eyes. Now, the criticism that I've had of Jalen Green, and I've defended Jalen Green, is the consistency. So, Jalen Green has shown this over a month. Jalen Green, it started with the player of the week. He's shown it over a month. He's shown it over, let's see if he can do it for 2 months. Let's see if he can do it for 3 months. Let's see if he can do it for half a season. Let's see if he can do it for a full season. So consistency, to me, is the thing that I always need to see from Jalen Green. But I'm very encouraged that Jalen Green is developing and maturing as a player. This is why, let's be patient, guys. It's only year three. He's only 21 years old. It's the first time he's ever been coached by a real coach on, making winning plays. And you mentioned the facilitating and finding Jabari in the corner. Like, that was one of many times that he did that yesterday. He flirted with a triple-double in yesterday's game. He played good defense, had a big, like a critical block in that game. So Jalen Green is making winning plays. And yesterday he shot it well, and he scored 37. He's not going to shoot it well every game. And in fact, he's not. I don't think he's ever going to be like a great shooter. Hopefully he becomes a good shooter. He's more scorer than shooter, and he's more playmaker than shooter, which is fine. Like, know your limitations, know who you are as a player. There's going to be night, like last night, Jalen was 7 for 11 from 3. That's an outlier. That's about as good a game as he's going to have from three-point range. He might have games where he's 3 for 11. That's fine, but make those winning plays. Make those winning passes, and that's the area where I think Jalen Green has grown the most. I credit Ime Udoka for that, and that's why I'm bullish on Jalen Green over what I've seen over the last month almost.
Yeah, I think the other thing, too, is the fact that the threes that he's making of the ones that he made, a lot of them are highly contested, difficult shots. And that just shows you whether he's a shooter or a scorer, when he needs to make shots, he has an ability to make them at a higher level than most. I mean, some of the contested step backs that he was taking and making late when they needed him, you're like, whoa. I mean, that's eye-opener whether you were on his side or not. You know he shows his ability. But you're right. Udoka should get the most credit because this is something that Silas could never do, never reach him to do, and never get him to do the other things that a really good player in this league does. And now we're seeing it all develop in 1 year's time. And I think to your point on consistency, the biggest thing for me is he had that heater a little while ago where he went 8 or 10 games. I think it was right around the All-Star break or right after it. And then he kind of dialed off a little bit. But then he picked it right back up to where you're like, look, in the ebbs and flows of an NBA season, all guys are going to have some highs and lows. The fact that he's able to do this again and then consistently keep it going this time makes me believe this is the time where the switch is flipped on and it doesn't turn off.
713-780-3776. When do the haters have to apologize? 3311 says never. The hate was valid at the time. It depends on what the hate was. If you were saying that they should have traded Jalen Green from Mikal Bridges to the Nets at the deadline, then I wouldn't say that hate was valid because that would have been a huge loss for the Rockets. 3000 says Mike's contract, though. You don't have to make that decision this offseason.
Like, nope,
it's the beginning of it. Like, it's the start of when you can do it, but you don't have to do that right away. So I do want to see more before I hand that out because that's not going anywhere. Like, it's not Major League Baseball where the sooner you get it done, the cheaper you can get it done. The max contract's the max contract. It's not going anywhere. You have time to wait on that in the NBA.
The thing, too, Jeremy, about the text before that, if you were criticizing him and hating on him because of some of the things that we had highlighted, not getting back on defense, complaining to the officials too much when a shot didn't go in or he thought he got fouled, you know, not moving it, swinging it, and expecting that he'd get it back, those are fair criticisms at the time. But, yeah, to dump out on him and to want to just unload him for Mikhail, we both said, that's a horrible deal for them. And why would you do that now when you don't have to? Then that's a different story.
713-780-ESPN. When do you have to apologize to Jalen? Someone, Astros Josh, says, I'm sorry. Chris says, I'm apologizing for sure. Just hope this is for real and not just another streak. I think there is that, you know, you're kind of the guarded optimism, maybe. Andrew Bryant, they don't. He earned the criticism. Kevin, they won't. They will reappear from the trees. And then Chris says, at what point do we start to wonder if the open floor without Alpi has contributed to this?
Well, I think that's a fair conversation to have, and that's where the challenge lies with Udoka for next year. Because now, you know, we've seen what Alpi can do, but we've seen that Jalen has done something and taken it to a different level with Alpi out there. Now you've got to construct an offense to where you can highlight and complement both. I think it's not rocket science, no pun intended, but it's as a coaching staff in the NBA, there's a way to exploit in a positive way both guys, and there should be no reason why Jalen can't do this with Alpi on the floor.
Yeah, I think that they can both excel offensively. We've seen them both excel offensively this year. It was before Jalen was playing at this level, though, before he was as consistent as this. He would have some games where he would pop off with Alpe on the floor. I think that they can certainly coexist, and I think it's the job of the coaching staff. Okay, what's the best matchup here? What's the best way to attack? I think Alpe being able to turn into a 35% three-point shooter would make it a lot better as well. I'm not as concerned offensively. I think it is fair to question, though, defensively, if this team's better with Alpe on the floor or off the floor. Because defensively, they're far better without Alpe. So, like, what is the combination? How much are you gaining offensively that you're not giving up defensively? Because if you watch this starting five, and they did this in the down the stretch, and they did it in every single play in overtime, whenever you have the starting five on the floor, the new starting five, with Fred VanVleet, with Jalen Green, with Dylan Brooks, with Amen Thompson, with Jabari Smith, they're switching every single screen.
Yep.
They're switching every single ball screen, which makes you better defensively. It doesn't open up some holes in your defense. You cannot do that with Alpe Şengün. I think the biggest way that the Rockets have improved without Alpe is because they're so much better defensively.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that the other thing is when Alpe's on the floor, they'll try to do the high pick and roll, or they'll try and get a switch to where they can get the maximum matchup where he's on the other team's best offensive player. Because you have so much versatility and ability to defend with that starting lineup you're talking about now, it takes away and it limits the offense's ability to try and find a matchup that works. You know, I was thinking about it as you were talking there, too, about the fact that, look, we've seen when Chris Paul and Harden were on the floor, they started the game, and then pretty quickly after that, Paul would come off the floor until James got his run for the majority of the first quarter. Then when James sat down, Paul would be on the floor. The biggest thing was in the fourth quarter when you need buckets, both were on the floor, and they found a way to make that work, too. It's just you have to make sure when Alpe's on the floor that the guys around him are capable of playing help defense, that you don't have to do as much because Jalen can defend.
713-780-ESP and HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Corby Craig from BetUS, he'll be joining us next, telling us all the best bets in the Sweet 16 matchups for tonight, for tomorrow. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Decoy in Spring Branch.
The Bees at the Decoy in Spring Branch, your spot to watch all of your sports this weekend. Astros opening day, opening week, college hoops at 6. Drink specials like $3 Makers, $2 Mexican candy, a 100-ounce Shiner Box Tower for just $10. Let's go out to the HRMP guest line. Joining us now on the HRMP guest line, our friend Corby Craig, joining us each week at the NCAA tournament from BetUS.com. Corby, thanks for taking a few minutes this afternoon to join us. Four games coming up tonight in the NCAA tournament. Let's start in the West region. 2-seed Arizona, 6-seed Clemson. I've seen a lot of the experts here, and it seems like everybody's on Arizona. How do you feel about this with the Wildcats getting 6.5 points?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I came on here last week talking about how good Baylor was. You know, Clemson just comes out and it looks great. So my opinion is slightly tainted here. I just don't think Clemson is to the standard of any of these teams. I'm surprised that they made it as far as they did. So I'm going to kind of side with the experts here and be on that Arizona bandwagon. I think they have the ability to speed up this Clemson offense. And if you speed up Joseph Girard, I think that Clemson can have a little bit more turnovers than we've seen. He's used to playing a Syracuse type of zone and slower pace. Now Arizona, obviously one of the faster teams in the nation, does have the ability to make that a little more fun.
Corby, I've looked at the matchup. I've seen a lot of the experts say if there's going to be an upset tonight, a lot of people are looking at Alabama and Carolina. I was a little surprised by that, but I'm curious your thoughts on Alabama's chances against a one seed like Carolina.
Yeah, I kind of disagree with you. I'm a born and raised Alabama kid, so my family wouldn't be happy in me saying the fact that I don't know if Nate Oates is as good as people give him credit for. He is a very good coach, don't get me wrong, and he's turned Alabama in a direction that is quality, and we see all these metrics say they're the best team in the nation offensively, et cetera, et cetera. But at the end of the day, you go and look at the players, and you're talking about guys who aren't five stars, guys like Mark Sears, who was great at Ohio. But, like, at some point, you're going to run into a mismatch of talent, and North Carolina is that. North Carolina gets basically all the talent they want at this point. And I think that at the end of the day, when you play the pace this game is going to be played, the total is 173. talent is what's going to win that game. I think that North Carolina inevitably does have more talent.
Corby Craig, BetUS, joining us. You mentioned the pace there because you look at all SEC basketball and you're getting tons of possessions, tons of points in these SEC games. How much are you looking at the total of 174.5 in that one?
Yeah, it would be really hard for me to try to convince you to bet an under, wouldn't it? I mean, the pace is going to be there. It's crazy to think that an 83-82 game is still well under the total. It's just crazy to think in college basketball. But unfortunately, if I was to bet it, I would look towards that angle of an under. If you think this is going to be a close game, there's not going to be fouls. So I think this number kind of projects in a few late-game foul situations. And we've kind of seen Alabama in these points not go to the free throw line as fast as they can. Like they kind of will let the game play out because they know they're going to play so many possessions. They don't need the foul team when they're down with 2 minutes left, as they're going to have seven possessions. So I think probably less fouling than people would imagine. Now, do I want to bet an under in Alabama, North Carolina? I do not at all.
I'm curious, from the standpoint, we're talking about the ones, too, a lot. Everybody's already basically, you know, anointing UConn in a lot of ways, and you know, everybody thinks they're going to run away with it. Do you see UConn having problems tonight at all?
I don't. I actually would think the exact opposite. I think that if there's a game that's going to be a blowout and I was going to bet on it, it would be this UConn side at 11.5, which sounds crazy. To bet an 11.5, I think it might have fell down to 10.5, but to bet that in Sweet 16 sounds crazy. But you have to reference, like, what have teams done to stop San Diego State? And it's been pretty easy. UAB, the easiest case in point is they just run to the zone. San Diego State can't shoot the basketball. It's kind of noted at this point. But the issue is they're so big. Lede is a massive body. That versus UAB, he was able to have 26 points on pretty easy shots even in the zone. And Yale, poor Yale, they didn't stand a chance in the paint. You can allow them to shoot, and I think that UConn does have the bigs to stop Lede. So if the only way that I'm proving wrong, I imagine, here is if San Diego State can shoot themselves out of the zone. But I imagine UConn, for the first time this year, will go into a zone, which we haven't seen. But it looks like every team is going to at this point. No one believes that San Diego State can shoot.
Yeah, the rematch of last year's national championship game. It seems like Danny Hurley's taking a little bit of pride, too, and blowing out a bunch of teams. The final game of the day, it's the one that I'm looking forward to the most. One of the best defenses in the country, if not the best defense in the country, versus one of the best offenses in the country, if not the best offense in the country. Iowa State, the 2 seed against the 3 seed Illinois. Iowa State's giving 1.5. How do you see this one playing out, Corby?
Yeah, if you ask me to circle an upset, this is the one I am circling as well. This is going to be the best game of the day, in my opinion. You just see two completely different schemas. You see basically a team who wants to run fast, and more importantly, a team with an NBA superstar. Terrence Shannon has played his way into the talks of being a great NBA player. Not great, but like, you know, as a college kid, you can only project so far. And Terrence Shannon has crossed all the checks that he needs to cross. Now he gets to face a coaching nightmare. And Osterberger, who has had Iowa State as one of the best defenses, regardless of the talent level, for quite some time. So I think that from a talent standpoint, again, if you're going 5 guys on the court, this is Illinois game to win. And if you're going from a scheme standpoint, Iowa State gets dead. So it's dependent on what you think. But in March, I think we've all kind of seen this story play through a few times, and an elite player will make a team rise to the top. So we see a Jimmer Fredette type of game. And madness to allow his team at that kind of high pace to take the stage. And this feels like Terrence Shannon's ability to do that here.
Obviously, we turn the page to tomorrow, Corby. Everybody wants to know because everybody's a Coug. The Cougs grinded one out, gutty, gritty performance, dug deep into the bench, and got themselves a win against A&M. Now they take on a Duke squad that's got a Filipowski when the bigs are kind of hurt and dinged up a little bit for the Cougs. How do you see it playing out?
Yeah, I think we talked about that Houston A&M matchup as a scare the first time we talked. I really like this Houston team. I have futures on them from the preseason. But, I mean, A&M gave them trouble the first game, too. I don't put as much weight as people were kind of talking about the scare of Houston not being as good. I saw that as a really tough matchup. A&M wants to play the most bully ball they can, and they have a legit score, or two even. And I think Duke, just unfortunately, is not that. Like, we see teams with success versus Houston are basically teams with thick skin and are able to take that pounding all night and kind of rebuttal it. And then we go look at Kyle Filipowski, and you look at him and you're like, well, this guy really wants to shoot the three. Not really worried about ground pound down low. He does all the things that I think Houston would allow a big man to do. And if Filipowski shoots 26 points from the field and their guards are hitting the threes that they've been hitting, Duke could upset. But I think this is a pretty bad matchup for the Blue Devils overall.
Being joined by Corbin Craig, BetUS, BetUS.com. The other three matchups tomorrow, 2-seed Marquette, 11-seed NC State, and the other South Region game. And then the Midwest, you have the top seed Purdue against 5th-seed Gonzaga, 2-seed Tennessee, 3-seed Creighton. A fun group of games tomorrow. Of those other three, do you have a play that you like the most, a game that you're kind of circling is one that you know you think that you might have an advantage over the sharps that make the lines?
Yeah, I would, out of all of those, would be the craziest game to discuss, but I think people aren't giving the Zags enough credit. Like, we saw the Gonzaga, the big thing that nobody wants to circle back on is Gonzaga played Purdue in the Maui Invitational earlier this year. So it's not like this is the first time they've ever seen Zach Edey. And actually, they have changed their entire offense due to the fact that they got kind of crushed by Zach Edey. You go back and look at that game, I think Zach Edey, I don't have the number in front of me, but I believe he had 25 points. In a game where Gonzaga started a big man who wanted to shoot the three ball, they started Huff, and he's not really a physical big, and they realized pretty quickly, like, hey, we're not going to be able to win the national championship if we don't have someone who can ground and pound versus someone like E or Filipowski or all the bigs that are in college right now, Hunter Dickinson even. They played Kansas, and they swapped matchups so that they could be better in this matchup. And in that game, we saw a line of five, and in this game, we see a line of five. So do I think Gonzaga is the same team as we saw in November? I don't. I think they're exponentially better. And this game feels like much closer to a pick.
Corby, we appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the 8 games coming up the next 2 days. And then, of course, the 4 games Saturday and Sunday. And we'll chat again next week.
Yeah, guys. I appreciate it.
Corby Craig, BetUS, breaking it all down as the Sweet 16 upon us. 4 games tonight, 4 games tomorrow. And if you're looking for a place to watch one of those 4 games tomorrow, Houston Cougars and Duke, well, you know the spot to be is the Decoy and Spring Branch. They're your West Houston watch party. Cougs will have the full audio inside the Decoy of the game broadcast. And then during the commercial breaks, they have a DJ plan. So it's your party tomorrow for Houston and Duke at the Decoy. It's also your spot to watch opening day, which is going on now. College hoops tonight, $100 ounce Shinerbach Towers for just $10, $3 makers, $2 Mexican candies, and March Madness $6 Casamigos. Get to the Decoy in Spring Branch now. We'll step aside for a moment. We come back. What's the best and worst case at each Astro position? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Decoy in Spring Branch.
He's Blank. I'm Branham. Astros opening day going on today. Astros touching up the molester for 3 runs in the first. Yeah. Yankees threatened in the second. Bases loaded, one out. Fromber was able to induce a double play. Good Fromber. We saw a little bit of bad Fromber in the inning, loading the bases, one out. And then saw the good Fromber inducing an ending double play. So middle of the second there, 3-0 Astros. That first pitch, by the way, 6:05 today. You can watch the Astros at the Decoy in Spring Branch. College hoops beginning at 6 o'clock today. $100 ounce Shiner box for just $10. $3 makers, $2 Mexican candy, $6 Casamigos. I want one of each, please. And then tomorrow, they're your West Houston Cougar watch party. DJ during the commercials. Full audio during the broadcast in that one. Get to the best and worst case at each of these Astros positions. Can we talk about what do we expect at this? You know, what's the range at each of these spots? First, though, I saw some people today on the internet and other stations that didn't really have an idea of how 60-day ILs worked. Just embarrassing, really, the cluelessness of how a 60-day injured list works. But whatever. What's your best worst case scenario at the catcher position, Blankers?
Obviously, best case scenario is, and you're talking about just raw stats for the combination of the two guys.
This is how you see things going, best and worst case. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I know. You're a little behind us. I held my breath. You should have seen Joe George.
I had an idea.
And then Joe George and Brian McDonald just gazing at me like, there's your boy. Yep. Well, look, if that's the Jake we get, I'm excited. Great. Good job. Way to go. Fantastic way to start the season for Jake.
That doesn't sound very enthusiastic and happy for Jake.
I want him to do well because
great for him. Great.
Do you
good
care,
for him.
Blankers? Do you care more about Jake or do you care more about your opinion of Jake?
No, I've said this all along. I hope I'm extremely wrong. I hope he plays his tail off.
I know. And, I know that you think that.
Yeah, and that's a great way to start. If you're an Astros fan, that's fantastic.
Let's start in center field. What's your best and worst case in center field?
Best case scenario is that Jake hits righties and lefties. The deer in the headlights is gone, that look at the plate and in the outfield. And you get a guy that, look, I don't think he has to overperform. I think that, you know, it's nice to see that he has occasional power. But if he's hitting in the 260s and, you know, and he's getting on base and he's playing good defense, that's pretty good for a center fielder in baseball.
Is a 15-15 season possible?
I think so.
I think I need more stolen bases, because I need him to lead the team.
Okay, well,
there's a better chance to hit 15 home runs than 15 stolen bases.
I'll go ahead and up it then. Is a 2020 season possible?
No, it's not. No, it is not. He's not hitting 20 bombs.
I think he has a better chance to hit 20 bombs and steal 20 bases. Like,
that's why I think either one of them. I don't think either one of them are going to happen.
He does.
Let's just level it at 15-15. If he hits for a decent average, decent slash line, and he's 15-15, we're all happy, right?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. My best case is just that he takes over the center field job. Like, he becomes a guy that you can pencil into center field, and you're not worrying about upgrading the position for, like, the next 2 to 3 years. Like, he just takes the reins of being given this opportunity to win the everyday center field job, and he just takes it and runs with it. And it might not be, like, this huge stat line. Maybe it's just 250 with 15 homers playing really good defensive center field. But that's, like, enough with this lineup, I think. So best case to me, he just takes over the job. And Jake Meyers is the guy. You're not looking for a center fielder constantly. My worst case is it's the opposite of that, and we're calling for Jake Meyers to be benched 2 months into the season, and everybody's saying that Mauricio Dubon should be the everyday center fielder. That's my best worst case without, like, making it too number heavy.
Yeah, I'm great with that. I'm fine with that. Just the fact that, like you said, he can settle in, and we know we've got a guy for the next couple of years that you don't have to worry about, then that's fine with me, because it makes everything else a little bit easier to be able to work with if you're Joe Espada and you're not looking for, you know, extra outfielders all the time and trying to figure out righties and doing the things that they had to do with him and Chaz in center a year ago. That'd be fantastic.
All right, left field, best worst case.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, I'd love to see Chaz have another year like he did last year. Just anything that hovers around those lines, maybe even a less than. Even if it's a little less than, I think you're going to get a good defensive outfielder. You're going to get a guy that's above average from an offensive perspective, and you're going to get a guy that fits beautifully with this lineup. I don't think that's soft selling it, but if he can do that, that'd be fantastic.
My left, same thing. Chaz, for him to do what he did last year over 150 games is my best case scenario, and that would be like a really good offensive left fielder. And then worst case is that he regresses back to where he was. Like, and he wasn't bad 2 years ago, but 2 years ago he was probably an average bat in left field as opposed to last year being a good bat in left field. So best case, he is who he was last year over 150 games. Worst case, he's who he was 2 years ago, and it's just an average bat in left field. Right field with Tucker.
I mean, obviously I think Tuck's a guy that is capable of putting up massive numbers, and with the way we've been doing our predictions for the year and the screw job in the order that I got and some of the stupid mistakes.
Come on.
I'm just playing around a little bit. I obviously have him in a lot of categories. I need him to be great. I think best case scenario for Kyle Tucker is, again, a season like he put together last year. I think this team, this lineup overall is better offensively top to bottom, where he doesn't have to have, you know, the same numbers as last year. That'd be nice. But I think even if they're a little less, I think there's a little bit more in this lineup. And they're, again, they're fine because he's a good defensive outfielder, and offensively he's capable of doing power and average and everything else.
I would say with what he showed us last year, his best possible outcome would be the MVP of the American League. I mean, I think that's within the cards for Kyle Tucker. If he gets to the 30-30 season with a good average and maybe even goes above that with the power, we haven't seen 40 home run power, obviously, from him yet. But there's no reason why he couldn't be in the running for American League MVP.
Yeah, that's my best-case scenario, is that he's going to be the AL MVP. Worst-case scenario, I think he has a high bar. I think worst-case scenario, he still gives you, like, above-average offense. He still gives you a guy who's a contender for Gold Glove. His postseason last year wasn't great. Like, maybe you could throw that into the worst-case scenario, too. But I do think he's an MVP candidate. All right, to the infield catcher spot, Yiner, Caratini is going to get some good run there, too. Blankers, best worst-case behind the dish.
Best case is you get just an offensive explosion from a guy that showed you every reason to believe he's going to be an unbelievable offensive weapon in the American League. And you get a guy that you know, can hit you 30 bombs and you get a guy that's going to drive in close to 100 runs or, you know 80 to 100 runs and put pop and the ability to put the ball in play that we haven't seen with Maldonado in those years. And when he's not playing, you've got an adequate backup behind him that brings versatility to the plate that can do things to where I think that you really improve all across the board. But just Yiner every day giving you the ability to break out offensively is huge.
I can see Yiner becoming
one of the biggest, more volatile spots, quite frankly, because Yiner is a good offensive player. Yiner showed that he was a good offensive player last year. But we haven't seen him behind the dish for an extended period of time, obviously, in the bigs. So, does that playing a bunch of defense, does that take a toll on his body? Does that, break him down a bit? Does that, the wear and tear, does that impact his offense? And then also, was it a one-hit wonder? I don't think that's the case, especially offensively. Best case scenario to me is that he takes the reins and can be a good enough defensive catcher where you have no problem playing him 120 to 130 games behind the dish. And his bat's so good that the other games he's DHing. So to me, it's more about the defensive side. Like, is he going to lead the league in pass balls like Maldi did? Hopefully not. Can he handle the pitching staff? So from that standpoint, I want to see what he looks like over a full season. Best case scenario that he handles all that stuff nicely, and we're not even talking about it in a year. Worst case scenario, he doesn't do that, and we realize that he's not capable of being a catcher over 130 starts, and they have to move his position because he doesn't handle it. I would bet on the best case more than the worst case, though.
I would, too. And I'm curious. I went light on the home run numbers, but do you think that what's best case and good numbers for him for a full offensive season of playing almost every day?
It kind of depends on what they do with him on the days off. Like, whenever he's not, because he's not going to catch 150
right.
games. 130 is probably pretty lofty, too. But if he starts 125 games behind the dish, what are you doing with him in the other 35 games? Is he DHing all of them? Are you giving him a little run at first base? I haven't heard anything to that front on the ladder, so I don't think he's going to play first base at all. So it depends to me on what you're doing whenever he's not catching. If you're just getting him off his feet, giving him a day off, and you're not getting his bat in the lineup, that's different than if he's DHing those other 25 games.
Yeah, I went light by a 30 bomb, but he's capable of more than that. I just hope that he settles in so that we see a guy that's comfortable in against righties and lefties and just, is able to be who we think he can be. It's just his first full season in the bigs. I don't expect him to have monsters that he's capable of later in his career, but I think he's fully capable of a 30 home run season.
Yeah, 23 homers and 377 plate appearances yesterday. Yeah, I think he has 30 homers in his bag. Brian, what were you saying? Yeah.
I was going to say, I think his upside is becoming the best power hitter at the catcher position in the league. I mean, certainly there. I mean, Salvador Perez used to be that guy, but
Rutschman.
He's fallen off with his power. Rutschman would definitely be in the conversation, but I don't think his raw power is as much as Yiner Diaz. So I think he could become the best power hitter in the American League at the position. What that looks like average-wise, I think, kind of represents his downside in that we saw basically him take practically zero walks last year. Doesn't have the best play discipline. So maybe if the book is out, the film is out, and the league starts to adjust to him, if he doesn't adjust back, I think we could see the batting average plummet from that 280, I think it was 282 last year. Not obviously down to Maldi levels, but a batting average that would be enough of a problem that we would point it out and have it as a part of the conversation.
Yeah, I think he has that in his bag too. First base with Abreu.
Best case scenario is he's getting more, minus the power numbers. I just don't think he's going to get power numbers like he had even when he was in Chicago. But I think best case scenario is you get the late surge that we saw out of him last year is consistent for the rest of this season, for an entire season. That he feels comfortable, that he gets back to hitting for average, that he has some pop in the alleys, even if it's just for extra bases. And you get a guy that belongs in the middle of a lineup as good as the Astros lineup, as opposed to a guy that was force-fed to us for a majority of the season being in the middle of the lineup because of his contract when he wasn't hitting very well at all.
713-780-ESPN. What's your best worst-case scenario with all these players? I'm going to say Abreu worst-case scenario. He's just who he was last year, maybe without the hot streak in the last 2 months. He's just who he was prior to getting a little bit hotter when he came off the injured list that second time around. Best case is he is who he was in the last 2 months and into the playoffs. So that's the best worst-case there for me. Let's take a look at the other three positions, second, short, third, and then the pitching staff when we come back. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees broadcasting live from the Decoy in Spring Branch on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.